This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Hello and welcome to Been There, Done That on Joy 94.9. It's lovely to be with you again.
Who are we?
Who are you?
I'm Phil.
You're Phil?
Okay. No, I'm Phil.
You're Phil. Okay.
I'm Phil, yeah.
Okay.
Right. You're not.
I'm Gordon.
That's right, because you're not Phil.
That's right. And the other fellow over there must be...
Topher.
Chris.
I thought it was Topher. We've used Chris for so long now, we use the other half of his name.
Oh, Topher.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah, that seems to be a very fashionable thing these days.
In Hollywood, with young Topher Grace.
I'd have to be called Don then. I don't like Don.
Well, he's good. Well, we can't say Gore. He's no good.
Oh, thanks very much. We've been having a little bit of a weekend full of gayness. Did you enjoy?
A huge weekend of gayness, actually.
Well, we observed that we didn't partake.
No, not us personally, but a lot of the people from Joy actually went up there and did the OB, outside broadcast, and were part of the action.
And I did see one of our tweets appear on the screen at the replay of the Mardi Gras on Sunday night.
Oh.
There was a Joy tweet came up.
It was a gross, deliberate promotion because the Joy logo came up twice in that tweet. I don't think we actually said anything.
But there was something written on it. It was said
probably Happy Mardi Gras.
Yeah. They did very well. That whoever was working the studio and working the call back from Sydney, it sounded great. They did a very, very good job.
And the actual broadcast team, the commentators, spot on. In some ways, I think they put the TV commentators to shame.
Well, the TV commentators are a bit of a bind, I think, because they have pre-recorded it and then they come in and have to speak over it. They did a very good job interviewing Cher, who was... She looked as though she was really enjoying herself too. Glad to be there.
Excuse me, there was a few hangers-on that were trying to get glory out of it.
They were there.
No, I'm talking about a certain PM.
Oh, but it was interesting to see that the leader of the opposition and Tanya Plibersek marched with Rainbow, the Gay and Lesbian Rainbow Group. They marched with them for the Labour, Gay and Lesbian Labour, marched with them. And I saw Penny Wong holding the banner in front of the Yes campaign. She was right up there at the front. Yeah. So I thought, well, at least they got down onto the street and joined in.
It was actually a change of tone, as far as I was concerned, in the parade. Rather than being just a fanciful event, outrageous costumes and a procession down the street, it actually had meaning this time. The 40 years anniversary and the achievement of the marriage equality.
Marriage equality was the thing that everybody was happy about.
A true celebration.
It was.
Last year there was still that bit of protest and I guess we needed change. So now that we've got it, let's enjoy it, but we don't stop here. I'd like to point out one of our Joy members
was
spotted on TV. Young Tom was with the disabled group, sitting in the back of a convertible, having the time of his life.
He was enjoying himself, wasn't he? I saw it come up on the screen, oh, there's Tom. Good on him, you know, for getting up there and being on the in the parade. Very well done, Tom. Very well done.
I don't know how many people were actually counted to be there, but they seem to be quite a enthusiastic group as well, and lots of tourists.
Well, they showed you an early shot of the crowd there. I think it might have been on the news that I saw it, and they all seemed to be Asian, the whole lot. I was sitting there saying, well, spot the Euro, you know.
Well, you've got to remember, too, that a lot of the Asian countries are still homophobic.
Oh, yes.
And especially, you know, people from Malaysia would be able to sneak out for a holiday just coincide with Mardi Gras and let themselves go.
Well, they always have a good time. I can remember when I marched in Mardi Gras, I did it four times, and They were the most enthusiastic people of the lot of them.
Can you imagine the trouble they get into if they're here for about a week? They arrive back in Malaysia, still covered in glitter because that stuff never comes off.
Well, that glitter cannon was, or the paper, what's name cannon was firing it off. And I thought, every time it went off, I thought, oh, the poor street cleaners. They probably got a fire hydrant hose and just washed it all into the gutter. Oh, but then where does it go?
They've got ride-on vacuum cleaners. They've great time.
Yeah. Oh, right. Okay.
I nearly got hit by one on Friday.
Right. You weren't looking where you were walking.
No, obviously. I was waiting for a tram and this guy came along and took
now,
all the leaves
now, Gordon,
away.
Gordon, you've been in one of the Mardi Gras, have
four.
You not? You've been in four of them. Mm. So once again, remind us, how early do you have to actually form it up before you start marching?
It's a very, very long day. You get yourself ready where you're staying, and then you have to get into the city, and you have to be in the holding area by 5 o'clock.
Right.
5 o'clock in the afternoon, and there you stand. There is no seats. There's nowhere to sit down. You're in the middle of a street, which usually has motor cars going up and down.
Yeah.
So there's nowhere to sit. Like, you can't sit in the middle of the, you know. So you stand there and you stand there and you stand there, and then you're pleased to hear the Dykes on Bikes start.
Yeah.
Because you know that the whole thing started, because you're down the street and they're up the thing around Hyde Park there, and that's where they congregate and that's where they drive from.
That explains why even today when you hear a motorbike rev, you start marching.
I do. Oh, yes. I put on my high heels and get going.
<That's right.
laughs> But no, and then you stand there until it's your turn to move off, and that could be another hour and a half after the Dykes on Bikes have started.
Wow.
So it is a very long, long time standing.
I hope there's plenty of portaloos for you.
No.
What?
Where we were standing the last time I was there, or the second last time I was there, you had to rush into the pub that was open, and it was jam-packed to use the toilets in the pub, because there was nothing in the street. Nothing in the street at all.
I mean, that's an opportunity for dehydration.
Oh, yeah. It's one of the failings that I felt was wrong. When we were doing it, there was never enough toilets for the people that were standing there for all that time. It's a hell of a lot of fun participating in the Mardi Gras. And if you get in some sort of costume and you just, nobody knows who you are and you're in the costume, you can just let yourself go and you can have such a wonderful time.
This is Senator Penny Wong. You're listening to Australia's Joy 94.9.
42 years ago was the first broadcast of colour TV in Australia.
Mardi Gras would be dead without colour TV.
Oh, wouldn't
it? It'd be so terrible in black and white.
It may not be so fabulous. We don't know.
Yes. Well, it'd be fabulous if you were there.
It would be straight because it would be 50 Shades of Grey.
Oh, yes.
You just had an opportunity not to say that.
Well, yes.
It's a wonderful experience, I can tell you.
It's a shareable experience, obviously, SBS.
Shareable.
Yeah, obviously, SBS recorded on the Saturday night, but the replay is a cut-down version, so I bet if there's anything provocative, it's already on the cutting room floor sort of thing.
I did like the fact that with the cut-down version on the Sunday, they were able to put in some of the things that happened. The
historical
items. I broke up, and so did I. I know that Phil did too, when that chap was in the jail and he was crying. That just reduced me to tears as well. It was just awful, and I kept screaming, Patrick, get him out of there, you know, because it was upsetting him so much, you know. And I thought Patrick Abood was just wonderful. Has such compassion. And it was just, he could see what was happening, but I felt he should have taken him straight out of there.
The funny thing is, in previous years when they've had those little cutaway pre-recorded bits, I've found them very self-indulgent and rather boring.
Mm.
But this year they were all excellent.
Yeah, then there was the person down at, they filmed him down at Green Point, which is just about at the bottom of South Road in Brighton.
Or at the bottom of the cliffs.
Yeah, down at Brighton there, when he was said, because he said he was picked up there by the police, you know, agents provocateurs.
Yeah, here in Melbourne.
Yeah. But they did the same thing in Sydney. They were doing it everywhere.
London,
all around the world they were doing this. They had these agents.
Some of the groups that were involved, they might have been social groups, but I think the public involvement of gay dads, gay families.
Oh, that was lovely.
And the rainbow families was brilliant.
Yes, they were gorgeous, and the kids were having a good time. And it just showed you that these idiots that get around and say that gay parents can't bring up their children, it's just so wrong, you know, because they had the lesbian couples with their children, the gay dads with their children. They were all, and I saw one gay dad carrying his little one up, probably about 2 or 3 years old, but I couldn't tell whether it was a boy or a girl because it was in his arms. The baby was in the little person was in the arms, you know. But I just thought, how lovely. Just absolutely wonderful.
The people who need to see that vision were not watching.
Probably not, Phil.
Like our friend down in Frankston, who was so far against the safe schools things, saying, you know, two mothers can't raise a child.
Yeah.
They need to see perfectly normal human beings growing up with gay parents.
That's it. That's right, yeah. And who's to say that their children are going to grow up gay anyhow? They probably
Well, they're typically not, because it's not...
Not the thing. It's, you know...
It's not a choice.
No, it's not a choice. You're born like that anyhow.
Joy. Out. Loud. Proud.
You're with Chris Gordon and Phil. Been there, done that on Joy. We were talking earlier about Mardi Gras and the scenery, the street scenery, the costumes.
Absolutely beautiful.
The colour, the movement.
But there was a lot of one costume that is a reference to this time of the year.
There are two types of costumes. There's the flowery wings and feathers and boas and all the other stuff. But then there's the good ones.
The gorgeous.
The Speedos.
The Speedo costumes, yes. And that's what we're talking about, because the man that invented the Speedos was actually born on the 22nd of February 1927. And his name, of course, was Peter Travis. And the amount of Speedos that were sold for the Mardi Gras was absolutely incredible. And I did love the Melbourne water polo team's Speedo briefs that they had. Mind you, they had some good bodies too amongst a lot of them. But
yeah,
they were beautifully coloured. They were like, I don't know whether they were rainbow coloured, but they were the colours of their club or what.
It's funny how you weren't noticing the colour.
I was noticing the colour.
I was noticing the contents.
No, but I'm an artist, you see, and you look at colour first, which is stupid, I know. But they were beautifully made, and they were worn beautifully as well. And then you had the lifesavers. They were there with their red budgie smugglers on, and I thought, well, why isn't Mr. Abbott amongst them wearing his?
Because they've got standards. And I bet they've got rules.
Oh, probably. But
we're talking about the designer, Peter Travis.
Yeah.
So it wasn't Barry Budgie or Simon Smuggler.
No. Thank you, Phil. Back in the 1960s, Peter was absolutely turned off as being a Sydney boy and using the oceans for his recreation.
Yeah, he was a surfer.
He was a surfer. But he hated the fact that the costumes of that stage were long. What are they? Too big, too long, and uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So what sort of costumes does that remind you of? Sort of shorts?
Shorts. Things like this. But that's what they were wearing those days, were shorts, where they were for get out on the water.
Probably.
I think you had a leg in you. I can remember when I was a child wearing bathing costumes with legs in them, and they were made of bloody wool, which was even worse.
And itchy.
No, they weren't actually itchy, but they just didn't dry, and they were awful bloody things to swim in, you know. They dragged in the water.
So, but anyway, he reckoned that he could design a costume that would be more comfortable and appropriate for swimming. Because, as you're saying, those costumes, the early ones, when they got full of water, they dragged the body down. So
I'm just wondering what the Olympic swimmers wore before the budgie smugglers were invented. Like, what did they wear at 56 at Melbourne Olympics? It'd be interesting to get some of the pictures of that to see what sort of... Because they were breaking world records with whatever they swam in. But then he came along and he invented this little one.
In the ancient games, they wore nothing.
Exactly right.
So 1956, pretty ancient.
Yeah.
Before my time.
Peter Travis was actually, he's quoted as saying, he was aware of the enthusiastic reception by the gay community for his new swimming costumes. But he said that the sexuality aspect was just a bonus.
Yeah, but the first time that they were worn on Bondi Beach, they were the people that were wearing them were arrested. And the judge threw them out of court because they were not showing pubic hair.
That's right. That was the judgment of being indecent or not.
Yes, yes.
But I was thinking, as we that in fact a lot of guys manscape these days, so if they trim their pubes, they could still have a very, very brief costume.
Well, I can tell you what, those water polo people, their costumes were not as big as an ordinary Speedo, I can tell you. But they were drop-dead gorgeous anyhow.
Yeah, and you were saying, Gordon, that you were accosted on the beach down here.
Oh, yes, when, many, many years ago down at St Kilda Beach. I had one of those, first of those sort of things way back in the 60s. And I bought them and I was wearing them, but they were all right. They were great to swim in. But I went off the beach onto the promenade, like the footpath, and I got pulled up by two policemen and told to get back
picked
on the beach.
Picked up by the fuzz.
Picked up by the fuzz, yeah. Hurt like hell.
I'm laughing on the inside.
But I was told not to come out on the footpath wearing those costumes. Well, like about 2 years later, everybody was wearing them. But I had to laugh because they turfed me off the footpath and there was a lady walking along the thing with
in a negligible
in a very small bikini, and she was not a very small lady, and you know, I just said, okay, well, there you go, you know, it's one rule for some, and well, the police weren't worried about what I looked like, they were worried about what she looked like, I think.
But anyway, it took on as a fashion item, and most guys that had bodies that could wear them were wearing budgie smugglers.
Mm-hmm. Well, it made it.
He never called them that, of course.
No.
And he sold his design to Speedo. So the name Speedos was, I think, what most people refer to them
as.
They
were originally called Sluggos.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what they call them, Sluggos, rather than budgie smugglers. But anyhow, I tell you what, if you ever do water aerobics, which I did do for quite a while until the pool closed, it's much easier to do the movements in a pair of budgie smugglers than a pair of board shorts or a pair of those swimming shorts. And because we had a couple of guys came in wearing them, and they couldn't lift their legs up or do anything with them because they're too restrictive. Which that is why Peter Travis made them, because they're non-restrictive. You could lift your leg as high as you want, nothing happened.
Peter Travis, gay designer and ceramicist.
He was also a kite flyer, which he's most world famous for, because he used to fly kites and invent them and build them. And he even sold them to the big museum in London, the Victorian Albert Museum.
These kites were sort of like aerial sculptures, and they would fly. And that's what his exhibition there in the V&A is all about.
Yeah, but he also he flew a lot of them over the Sydney Harbour for special celebrations, and people were just absolutely transfixed by the way they worked. Yeah. And he said himself that you lose yourself when you're flying a kite, because you've got to manipulate them and you've got to do this and make sure that they're catching the wind and all that. You would have to do that.
Yeah, you can almost choreograph them.
That's right. It's the same as when you're painting. When you're painting, doing something, and you've got your canvas in front of you, your mind goes a complete blank about everything. You're just looking at that thing and painting what you're looking at. Peter Travis.
Born on the 22nd of February, 1927. Someone who died about this time of the year, 9th of March 1989, was Robert Mapplethorpe, a US photographer who was rather provocative in his topics and the way he did his photography. And Phil, you were making a comment. You were linking budgie smugglers with his work.
I was just suggesting that his models were probably never seen in Speedos for practical reasons.
Yes.
How delicately put that. That is a marvellous phrase.
This is radio. You have to visualise.
Well, I know what to visualise. Yeah.
Well, I was in the supermarket the other day and I bought some meat.
Did you?
Just sort of let you know that.
Oh, good. Okay.
If that helps the explanation.
but Robert Mapplethorpe, of course, was famous for painting very erotic, photographing very erotic situations between men and flowers and all sorts of bits and pieces. But he's just a magnificent photographer.
He was pushing the envelope.
I'm sure it went through the slot and back out the other side, but he was just absolutely. I've read his life story. I've still got his book at home with lots of his photos in it, and they're brilliant photos. But he only ever photographed with Polaroid. All his photos were done in Polaroid. Yep. And when they looked like making no more Polaroid, he went out and bought as much as he could buy of it. so that he had supplies to keep going, but then they finished up making it for him.
A very good film a few years back about a gallery in America that wanted to present his art and the public outcry against it and how they went ahead and upset a whole lot of people.
Well,
as you say, indecent exposure was probably the argument they were using.
Well, American be so prudish.
They're prudes, aren't they? But I saw his exhibition down here at our art centre.
Yeah.
They had a big exhibition way back when, and it was absolutely beautiful. And some of his photography, the light that he got onto them and all the rest of it, I don't know how, it was just absolutely amazing.
I reckon he was sponsored by an oil company, though.
Did you?
The amount of oil used in those photos.
Well, that was... But when you looked at some of his other photos, not only particularly the male nude, but all the other stuff that he did photograph, it's all brilliant
Most
stuff.
Of his work was in black and white.
It was all black and white, yes.
So you didn't have the contrast of colour,
no.
Just of the shading.
And that's where you got the light coming in, and that's why it's different to photograph in black and white than it is in colour.
It's a real skill, though. If you look at the old Ansel Adams photos, just absolutely beautiful. And they were back in the days of glass sheets.
One of the most famous Australian photographers was the fellow that did the sunbather, which is just the man with his arms crossed and his head on his shoulders, and that's looking straight at him. And the colour, the contrast of the skin and the colour and the shadows and the light that he's got on that thing, absolutely amazing.
Yes, radio, the best place to talk about photography.
Well, Samantha Fox is going to talk to us about the things that we've been talking about, although she goes one step further.
Oh.
She says, touch me, I want your body.
Oh.
Here on Joy.
You can find more Joycasts and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
You're with Chris, Gordon and Phil. Been there, done that on Joy 94.9.
Well, we've covered a couple of good subjects so far, but we've got another couple still to go. And one of them's concerns a man who's always in the public eye for different reasons.
Oh.
He likes pies.
He likes pies, yes.
He gets the face.
He has them in the face. And he has something to do with an aeroplane.
Oh, well, there we go. We know now, don't we?
Yes. Alan Joyce. And Alan Joyce was on the Mardi Gras.
Yeah.
And he had flown Cher out in a Qantas plane. So he was getting a bit of thing from that, you see.
Right.
Yes. So
there could have been a freebie flight for her.
Yeah, well, I'm sure it was and something for him. But he's just been offered a different position now.
Well, he's been announced as the co-patron of the national GLBTI Workplace Inclusion Program, Pride in Diversity.
Yeah.
He will share the role of co-patron with the Chief Executive of the Business Council of Australia, Jennifer Westacott.
He's taking over from another great GLBTI man who was there for 8 years.
The Honourable Michael Kirby.
Michael Kirby, yes.
I think he's had 8 years in the job.
Yes, he started. When they started that, he was the first man in charge of the whole thing, yeah.
Now, this not-for-profit organisation or program, Pride and Diversity, is run by ACON.
ACON, AIDS Council of New South Wales.
Pride and Diversity is now recognised Australia-wide. So many companies these days actually have pride groups within their staff.
There are a lot of companies that do have big gay groups. They're very good with their gay employees. They look after them and make sure that they don't get hammered or have any discrimination or all this sort of business.
But yeah. ACON should change their name, though.
Why?
Let's put an R for respect and call it ACORN.
They're supporting our drive for visibility and for inclusion and for acceptance. And if it starts in the workplace, it will affect the other workers there that have never possibly considered, gay people, do they deserve inclusion and respect? Yes, they do.
Because a lot of these businesses with these diversity programs going were represented at the Mardi Gras, and they were also very big in promoting the equal marriage as well.
That was
a very good thing to be.
Groups like ANZ Bank, they have got lots of people that are in the gay community. Not only within just ANZ Bank do they come out.
But they do it with NAB, have got one as well.
Yeah.
So it's a great idea.
And the service industries and nursing and fire.
Nurses, how many nurses are gay and of both sexes? It was like the chap who was a nurse at St. Vincent's Hospital up in Sydney during the AIDS crisis. And he had AIDS himself. He was infected himself.
Yeah.
That's the change that have come over in that field at the moment. It's wonderful with all the thing.
Pride in Diversity is an employer support program for LGBTI workplace inclusion. They actually give a rating to companies.
It's the Australian Workplace Equality Index.
They have one of those in America as well. And every year, Out Magazine or Advocate Magazine name the top companies that get up 100 points. And IBM is one of them, I know, that always gets 100. Mm. And IBM here in Australia is very supportive of the gay community as well.
Now, this sort of... Can I use a redneck expression?
I'll go for it.
Well, this infiltration of the workplace is just symbolic. I mean, the schools are being infiltrated as well. The whole country is turning gay.
Oh, don't tell anybody.
But the sky didn't fall.
You might get upset.
I've got a secret. We've been there all along. Yeah. Now we just put up our hand and say, hello.
Wave your rainbow flag.
And you're listening to Been There, Done That on Joy 94.9.
It's interesting, just on the Melbourne scene, that so many people have now got their office lanyards with their names on rainbow lanyards.
Yes, I've seen
now,
that on the train.
I don't know whether that's indicative of pride and diversity at work or whether it's just their personal selection.
Well, there's a lady on the train from Sandringham when I'm coming in on a Wednesday morning. We catch the same train and she's got a rainbow lanyard round her neck, and I often go to say, where did you get your rainbow lanyard? I'd want one.
Now, that's being bold and sort of out. It's really obvious because of the rainbow lanyard. But if you wanted to be a little more subtle, you might like to pick up, for winter, a Burberry scarf, because the gay designer, Christopher Bailey, who's been running the collection for Burberry for quite some years, has revealed his final creation. It's a variation of the Burberry check in which the horizontal fields have got stripes there in the rainbow colours, the six rainbow colours. Mm. It's not super bright, but it's in the subtle colours that Burberry uses in their scarves.
Yeah, and they make great clothing. Their clothing is beautiful. It costs you, but
top
it's beautiful.
End. Top end,
but beautiful.
No, well, guys will be able to buy these scarves and wear them, and it'll be just that little reflection.
I can't wait till winter to wear my rainbow scarf that I won on the cruise down the Mekong. It's beautiful. That's muted colours as well. So So there you go.
Mm. But the other thing is that Burberry is using some of the profits from the sale of these scarves and the fabric so that women will be able to wear, make into skirts or in winter coats.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be some of the best and brightest organisations supporting GLEQ plus youth around the world are being supported by some of the profits out of Burberry.
The British Fashion House has announced donations to three charities. Money will be going to the LGBTI Youth Homeless Charity, Albert Kennedy Trust, that's based in the UK, and the Youth Suicide Hotline, the Trevor Project, based in the US. Now, the Trevor Project is the one about the boy that was committed suicide.
And donations have also been made to the International Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Trans and Intersex Association, ILGA. After 17 years, he's exiting, but he's going out positive way.
With a very colourful way, actually, I think, yes.
Not with a bang, with a poof.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
Great shows, great topics, great radio. Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Been There, Done That with Phil, Gordon and Chris. Lovely to have you with us on this day.
Now, we were talking about Mardi Gras and how wonderful it was. And somebody on the television asked the one of the, I forget who they were talking to because I didn't have my face at the screen at the time, I just heard it, and they said, well, what are you going to fight for next now that you've got same-sex marriage or equal marriage rights and all the rest of it? What are you going to fight for next?
Were they presuming that this is the end of
I think they must have, because there's this whole ridiculous religious thing going on in Parliament at the moment that are trying to bring in more discrimination against us through this back door so the churches don't have to do this, that and the other, you know. And I'm sitting there saying, and I heard it, and I said, what about the bloody religious discrimination, you idiots?
Yeah, no, it's interesting that the statistics show that actually the number of adherents to any religions, all religions in Australia, is actually quite very low.
Yeah, it's dropping, yes. I think people are waking up to themselves.
Yeah, and let's face it, therefore, we complained last time about the Australian Christian lobby not representing so few people. Why have they got such a loud voice? Now, in fact, the churches have got that very poor representation as well.
But right now, that man from the Australian Christian lobby is front and centre talking to Kevin Andrews, is it? The fellow that's doing the...
Mr Ruddock, isn't it?
No, Phil Ruddock.
Philip Ruddock, yes, beg your pardon. Thank you, Phil. Yeah, he's right into Philip Ruddock's ear, you know, about the what he wants for the Christian lobby.
I hope you keep those words apart into his ear. Don't let them run into the others.
Oh, well, okay, I'll say into his ear, not into his rear.
You got it.
Well, yes. We want equality.
Yes.
Well, we want equality in all areas we're not currently included.
This is a big one. And it's also, and there's another thing too, there's still discrimination of children having same-sex parents. That's another thing that we have to really look at, that has to be looked at, because somewhere along the line, it's they're still getting a lot of discrimination. And that's another thing we can look at.
We've also probably got to recognise that while some pockets of the Australian population are not Aguinness, there still exist a few poofter bashers around.
Oh, they're still around.
And
homophobia has not been abolished.
Oh, God.
Oh, hasn't it?
No. All we got was the equal right to be married.
Yeah, exactly. But I think some of the problems might still exist in those newcomers who haven't yet adapted to the Australian environment. I don't know whether there's a few people who are very homophobic rather than just tolerant.
There was a case again in the program. They were talking about the young Asian girl who came and she wanted to go into the Mardi Gras, and she told her mother that she wasn't. Her mother was very, very homophobic. And she finished up, she watched the parade, I think it might have been last year, she watched the parade and she realised that this was her daughter's life.
Yeah.
And she should support her in whatever she wanted to do, which I thought, that's one thing that the Mardi Gras does show you, that that people are supporting the gay community.
We shouldn't have to educate individuals one at a time to say that you can't catch it.
Yeah, but...
You can just appreciate it.
But then they can go and spread the word to it. They spread the word to four or five friends, and those four or five start spreading it.
We have a lot of work to do.
It's like ripples in a pond. You know, if you can create a ripple, it can start something.
Well, I think the marriage equality vote was actually because of its 80% involvement by the Australian population in that voting exercise and the 62% acceptance of our arguments was a great example of visibility or making our community visible. And
it also points out that the church no longer rules the country.
Yeah.
Because they have to be part of that minority that lost.
Yeah. But then again, I was screaming at the television when I watched the Prime Minister sort of saying how wonderful it was to have the same-sex marriage. And I'm sitting there screaming, why didn't you just pass it through Parliament without the bloody postal thing?
He used the word we.
We, yes. Yeah, so,
no,
hello.
I don't know what we he was referring to.
His small stature.
Whoa.
I just put my fingernails back in, sorry.
But it's interesting how some people when they realise the chips are down, or in fact they're outnumbered, or that in fact the attitude has changed, will then, like the leopard, change their spots.
Mm-hmm. But I got very, very annoyed at that, and I thought, well, we needn't have gone through all the hassle and all the people that were denigrated and all the rest of it.
There's a couple of other extremes in the population that need to be covered as well, and that's the children.
Mm-hmm.
They need to have safe environments.
Well, children and in schools, you mean?
That's the teaching aid for the teachers to get their heads sorted so that they can then guide appropriately.
Yeah, when there's the bullying and hassling.
To other services, yeah, exactly. Right.
Yeah. So you want schools to be safe for children?
Oh.
If there was only a program to help with that.
That would be a good idea, wouldn't it?
And well, at least they don't have to worry about guns in the school.
I was just going to say, step one, don't go to school in America.
The other extreme is, of course, older people, when they suddenly, or when they become reliant on public services, volunteer services, things like that. There's a concept that, in fact, cheap labour is all that's worth giving towards the maintenance of older people in their homes or in other areas.
When you read about it.
And you can't skimp on those sorts of activities. So this, whilst in Victoria we've got the Rainbow Tick, which is a service to analyse and grade oldies' homes.
Well, organise that the homes that the people are going into are gay and lesbian friendly, LGBTIQ friendly.
Yeah.
That's when they get the rainbow tick. But they have to go through a whole thing about that,
precisely,
a whole lot of training sessions.
Education.
And that's really wonderful. But when you read about what, in some of these places, what they're doing to elderly people, it just makes you wonder whether you really want to go into one of these places in the first place. You know?
If you want to have to go back into the closet, that's, wherever it might be, that's not the way to go.
I'm certainly not going back in.
We're not going back in.
But should we make these places not for profit?
Not necessarily.
Because if they're out to make a buck, they're not going to spend it on good stuff.
Well, this is what happens all the time. And I know I'm partly involved in that industry. I just get very annoyed when I hear what's going on in one place in particular, and I think, how the hell can you do these things the way you're doing it? Just gets me.
Well, you'd hope as our politicians age, maybe they'll be more focused on care.
Oh, but then they'll be able to, they have such huge pay packets, they'll be able to afford private nurses, won't they? Excuse me.
Wishful thinking?
Wishful thinking, yes.
Coming up this next weekend, Monday the 12th of March, is Labor Day, a public holiday.
L-A-B-O-U-R.
It is.
For the labour that we do.
It had its origins in the labour union movement, specifically the 8-hour day movement, which advocated 8 hours for work, 8 hours for recreation, and 8 hours for rest.
That was the Masons that did that, the stone cutters and everything that were working on building the parliamentary buildings and all that sort of thing.
And I think it was the stonemasons here in Melbourne.
Melbourne that did it, yes. It was, that's what
and
I'm saying, it did it here.
And that whole concept was sort of created here. The workers were revolting. Generally,
they're not all revolting. Some
all
of them
all over the world.
The bosses thought they were.
But it took the mob here
to make the thing work.
Yeah. Because in the 1850s, when this all sort of got going, Victoria was flooded with migrants, all hoping to strike it rich on the gold fields. And many of them were British tradesmen who'd been involved in the workers' movement in England. And they brought with them a determination to achieve fairer working conditions, including reduced working hours, because they used to work up to 14 hours a day, 6 days a week, with no sick leave, no holiday leave, and the employers could sack employees at any time without giving a reason. There was some arguments about having reduced working days in Victoria. It was Australia's harsh climate, and the second was that working men needed some time to develop their minds through education, upskill. And the third was that tradesmen could become better husbands, fathers, and citizens if they were granted leisure time to spend with their families. You know, they seem so basic these days.
But I'm sorry, but it's going back to that way now. When you look at what you have to do to work these days, they're going to have to start looking for an 8-hour day again.
Well,
you know?
In 1856, the stonemasons won the right to a 48-hour working week, which entitled them to Saturday afternoons off and Sundays.
The memorial to the 8-hour day is up on the corner of
Victoria Street
and Lygon Street.
Opposite the Trades Hall.
Diagonally opposite the Trades Hall, there's a big statue up there with 3 8s across the top of the thing.
Now, what is the procession that will be happening on that day?
They're doing Moomba on that day, don't they?
Yeah. So that's
Kiss Me Bum Day.
Oh, right, okay.
That's what Moomba is supposed to have meant, actually.
Well, it doesn't mean get together and have fun, which was the lie we were told as
children.
That's
right, yes. But apparently it's
so Kiss Me Bum. That's exactly what should be happening on that particular day, is tools down and have a fun time.
And jump into the Yarra.
Yeah, with the flag, the Birdman.
Birdman.
Yeah. but that used to be the day when all the trade unionists used to march down from way up the other end of town, right down Swanston Street, out down to the over the river.
You know what they do now?
What?
They take their speedboat out to the lake and
have
fun because they're getting so much money. Yeah.
But not really. But this is the point with the union movement at the moment. It's being decimated by the governments who want to get control.
Big business and government
are trying to get control. Is it nearly time for us to go, young man?
It is.
Oh, is it?
So we'll see you next week. Bye for now.
Bye.
Bye.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.